hour number three, my guest, Ingo Swann, his book, Penetration, The Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy. And it's a profoundly important question, which takes up all the third part of the book. The second part dealing with the moon, which is a far, far more interesting place than most Americans have come to accept in the years since the Apollo missions were ended. Kurt is on the line from, Portland, listening on KOTK. Hi, Kurt. Your question, please.
Yeah, Mr. Swann, I was wondering if you're familiar with Richard Hoagland's take on structures on the moon, and if so, how close do you think he is to the truth?
Well, once you get the idea that there may be or are structures on the moon, how close the details that follow after that are just added to the basic concept. As far as I'm concerned, there are structures on the moon. It would take a lot to change my mind about that. He's much more involved into the details than I can take time to afford to be. So if he says there are structures on the moon and they look like this and that and so forth, that's fine with me.
Do you think that they're glass structures, glass domes?
Oh, yes. Well, okay. there's some there that I think that are just magnetically transparent, and with the constituency of glass. We tend, as I mentioned in the book, we tend to explain the ETs by our Earthside realities, and so we would have to say they're glass, but they could be some other whatever technological thing that serves the same purpose, but not necessarily being glass.
Okay. Well, thanks for your hit on that.
Okay.
Sure, you're welcome. And you said early tonight that in your original remote viewing that you felt we were warned. You felt we'd been warned off, but you earlier said that you remote viewed there were humans up there. So who's warning us off? Are those humans us, or are they human forms from elsewhere?
I don't know.
I mean, is it possible that we may have two or three different echelons on this planet of humans that are doing different things that the others don't know about?
Well, according to Zachariah Sitchin, we were created by the extraterrestrials in their image. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason to think, I mean, I don't know how to think about it, you know. I mean, I saw what to me were humanoid bodies on the moon. They looked like humans to me, except that they were telepathically aware that I was telepathically there. And we don't particularly on Earth have that developed that much to be able to do that. But the anatomy of what it would, the anatomy of what an ET would need, the anatomy they would need is, in some instances, should be quite different, because it's behind the scenes. It's known that our particular anatomy would not survive long excursions in space.
Mm-hmm.
Our muscular system breaks down, and our neurological system breaks down. So I guess there are designer bodies depending on what you're going to do. If you're going to fly from here to Arcturus, assuming that it's going to take some time, maybe you'll have a different kind of body. I don't know. Again, you know, we tend to picture the ETs as grays or something like that. But maybe, you know, if you've watched Star Trek, you see how many kinds of bodies could be devised to live in various environments.
Sure. You said something interesting a moment ago. Telepathically, they were aware that you were there.
Yes.
Telepathically, what was that like?
That was, I thought I should get out of there. That's what that was like. I think I told Axelrod, I think they know I'm here. And what is it they were sensing, you know? But we do have things like that on Earth. You know, people are aware of being psyched out, you know.
Was it a threatening thing or just a stern getaway?
It's just that I was surprised. And if I'm surprised, I'd probably go hide it behind a tree until I figure it out.
They were probably surprised, too?
I think so, yes.
Who is it, Ingo?
I don't know. I truly don't know.
You also talk in the book.
I can speculate, but, you know, I like to let my speculation go only so far.
I understand.
And in fact, part of what I have in a way of reputation includes that I don't just go completely out on the limb and start raving, you know. I don't know. Certainly the universe is inhabited, and you don't need SETI to look 300 light years away to find life. Do it.
Have you ever pondered the issue of how many different life forms may be visiting here?
Yeah.
Different civilizations, different species types, different whatever?
Mm-hmm. But that falls outside of feedback.
Always. Just for fun, though, step across the line. More than one, more than 10?
I don't know.
Is it a busy?
It depends on what you call life to begin with.
Is this a busy venue for other intelligences? This planet.
I think it is, but that's a problem because one wonders why that is. You see, if you think that, then you have to wonder why is it such a busy venue? I mean, why did this ship? What in that I saw in these ships in Australia, who needs the water? I mean, what are they doing with the water? And
taking it to the moon, maybe?
Well, now there's known to be water on the moon,
mm-hmm.
You know. Maybe it's not the right kind of water. I don't know. I mean...
Well, water is hydrogen.
Well, it's oxygen, too.
Mm-hmm.
Hydrogen is a fuel. I don't know. I guess, suppose oxygen can be made a fuel, too. I don't know, but... You see, you reach the edge of your reality system, and then you don't know what to think anymore. So most people retreat back into their reality system, and that's the Earth side difficulty. We can't get outside of our reality systems to think about.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's look at this from the ET's point of view. Why are they interested in the moon? Why? If they did tell us to go back to Earth and not bother them, why did they do that? You know. And why don't they come here and say hi? You know, let's talk. There are many issues.
Yeah, many people talk about the alleged astronauts' statements that were made concerning anomalous structures and events that occurred and that they witnessed up there. Mm-hmm. What's your sense of those? The astronauts, in many cases, have denied those statements. Do you feel that the astronauts saw and experienced up there, or did this stay away notice come by some other means?
I think it had to come about. If the stay away notice actually did take place, then it had to come about in a convincing way. You know, the Earthside military types that are doing this kind of research and so forth, you know, don't like to take no for an answer easily.
Mm-hmm.
So something significant, there had to be a significant demonstration of some kind,
mm-hmm.
which I think would not have, just astronauts' experiences probably wouldn't.
It would also seem logical that the astronauts would have had to have seen some of them at some point, something odd up there.
Well, one of them has admitted that and is trying to get open book on that. Isn't that Gordon Cooper or something?
Mm-hmm. It's something that bears very close scrutiny, and we'll get more, especially in light of your book, which raises all sorts of issues about the moon. Marcus in Seattle would like to step in here and say something. Marcus, listening on, I think, KITZ.
KITZ, 1400, yeah.
Very good. Hi, Marcus.
Hey, hi, fellas. Hey, a question for you. I've been studying this stuff since the 60s and 70s, the abnormalities of the moon. A semi-famous amateur astronomer named Fred Steckling took photos of craters on the moon and concluded that he saw, and I have it in his book, that they were kind of blurry pictures, but pictures.
Has he been cut off?
All right, his cell phone went into a blind and we lost him, but we got the idea. Fred Steckling and his work, Ingo?
Well, I think Fred Steckling used NASA photos. He did certain embellishments in drawings alongside of them, but he made his deductions based upon photos that he got from NASA before a lot of them were dusted out. That is a good book, and anybody interested in this topic should read that book, in preference even to reading my book, because there's a great deal of information in it. It's mind-boggling, actually. He did a really good job, and I think he's passed away now, but I heard that his son is keeping it in print.
And the book is called We Discovered Alien Bases on the Moon by Fred Steckling, S-T-E-C-K-L-I-N-G, published originally by GAF in 1981.
Mm-hmm. I think one would have to call a book finder like Amazon to find out actually where to order it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You also postulate in the book that the moon may not be solid.
Well, that's not my postulate. I mean, there are scientific papers early in the 60s or later in the 60s that present evidence for that. You know, even Carl Sagan mentioned that.
What would that mean to the average listener, though, Ingo? It's hollow, like a big papier-mâché moon?
It means that it isn't what we've been taught it is. That's what it means.
It means it's an artificial satellite,
yes. Perhaps.
We're going to pause?
Come here from somewhere else.
Yep, towed right into orbit, folks. A staging base, perhaps. Who knows? Something going on up there, and we'll be right back. As I mentioned earlier, the U.S. military, the Navy, sent up a satellite, Clementine, and completely mapped the moon with ultra-high resolution cameras, which probably including infrared and UV.
That was in the Times. That was reported.
That's right, 1994. And that means they could take pictures of a pack of cigarettes if there was one laying up there.
That's right.
And what do we see?
I don't know what we see. I haven't seen anything yet.
I mean, we haven't seen much of anything. Some low-resolution pictures, and that's all. William Corliss is mentioned in your book.
Oh, yes.
He broke down the lunar anomalies into 8 major categories. Let me just read them. The moon's orbital anomalies. What about those? What's odd about the moon's orbit?
Well, any number of things. Now, I'm not a professional on this kind of thing. You know, I have to depend on other sources. But it's been established that for a natural satellite, the moon's orbit is not what one would expect in a circumstance.
Lunar geology problems, lunar luminous phenomena.
The ones I like are the ones that fly up out of craters in formation.
Call those luminous phenomena, ladies and gentlemen. And yes, what Ingo just said has been witnessed. The motion of lunar satellites, anomalous telescopic and visual observations, lunar weather, and we mentioned clouds already, lunar eclipse and occultation phenomena, the enigma of lunar magnetism, all sorts of strange things up there. If the moon were towed into location as an observation platform, whatever, that wouldn't surprise people who are familiar with Velikovsky and others who talk about dynamic changes in our solar system, planetary in sense. I'm wondering, go ahead.
It doesn't necessarily need to be towed.
Well, I use the term loosely.
Maybe it can drive itself where it wants to go. I don't know.
Could be a U-drive.
There's a big thing circling the sun at the moment, which got some media display for a little while and then disappeared from view. But every once in a while, something starts circling the sun that's big enough to see. And that means it's quite huge.
Do we think mining going on up there? What does your RV tell you? Just habitation, R&D, staging? Any sense on that?
Well, George Leonard produced this wonderful book, which has a lot to do with mining and other people. And there's a guy out in Pittsburgh or someplace that's been watching the moon for 20 years, and the consensus of these kind of people comes down to mining of some kind. Although I don't, to me, I don't know why the moon needs to be mined, but then I don't know what UFOs need with Earthside water either. I mean, you get to the point where none of it really makes sense.
In Jacksonville, let's go down and say hello to Grant, listening on WJGR. Hello, Grant. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello. Mr. Swan, I was wondering, with your capacity as a psychic, are you able to access the Akashic Records?
Yes, but there's no feedback. I mean, one can think one can access Akashic Records, but then there's the problem of feedback.
What do you mean by feedback?
Validation.
Proving that you're...
Well,
was veridical, let's put it that way.
Oh. So you wouldn't know them if you looked at them. You wouldn't be able
to... Couldn't confirm their existence or the information in them other than what his senses tell him.
Well, there's in physics, there's a perfectly good hypothesis for the existence of something akin to the Akashic Records. If you say all information is available at all times, that's information theory. All you have to do is figure out how to get to the particular address of the information that you
exactly want. Exactly, but have you yourself ever witnessed anything or beheld anything that you thought might be the Akashic Record?
I tend to think in information theory, not Akashic Records.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Grant. In other words, all available right now, like a computer, and we just tap into it.
But the formal definition of Akasha from India is almost consistent with modern information theory. If information exists as a thing in itself, then it should be available at all times, no matter when it occurred. The conventional thing of the Akashic Records is that it's a record of what has happened in the past.
It's like going to a library, that's right.
Going to a library, but that cannot have been the intent of the word Akasha. In Sanskrit, it is more like information, and in fact, that's consistent with other Sanskrit terms, too, which are apparently dealing with information accessibility. And in that sense, if Akasha is defined that way, then that's consistent with modern information theory and modern physics expectations, too.
The book is Penetration, The Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy, the author Ingo Swan, my guest, and you can get this book, 1-888-453-4046. It's 888-453-4046. Ingo has a website, haven't mentioned this in a while, let me get this in before we break. It is simply www.biomindsuperpowers. It's all one string there, biomindsuperpowers.com. So check it out. Lots of information on remote viewing there. And you can also order the book through the website. Did you see the movie 2001? Of course you did.
Of course.
What'd you think?
At that point I liked my realities to stay in a sequential place.
Mm-hmm.
A program or something like that.
Right.
But as you get deeper and deeper into what we quote psychic stuff, and, you know, multidimensionality actually has to become something that's considered as a various kind of issues. And that was a movie about multidimensionality.
And more people are leaning that way now in the popular UFO community to explain some of the amazing things that are going on here. We're going to pause and come right back with Ingo Swan. Our lines are open, 1-888-ON-RADIO, if you should like to call in and ask a question of this legend who is with us tonight for 3 hours. Okay, our last half hour with Ingo Swan. If you want to call in, it's 888-ON-RADIO. What do you feel about, this is again spec, the agenda of certain alien groups about this abduction phenomenon? And you mentioned earlier in terms of telepathy. What are they up to, Ingo? Have you tried to come, again, we have no validation, verification, but what have you tried to do in that regard, if anything?
I haven't tried to do very much. There are certain things that would have to be done in order to be able to do something along those lines, and categorize the types of abductions, which in a really precise way has never been done. I mean, people are more involved with the emotional impact upon the Earthsiders, and but if let us say that abductions are real phenomena, then there are several kinds of them, and there's several purposes involved. The one that seems to come up the most is, what are they doing with our genetic materials, which seems to be one of the issues involved, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there could be other issues, too. I don't know.
There are a lot of people carrying a lot of grief and trauma around from these events.
Oh, yes. I can thoroughly understand that. I'm carrying grief and trauma from this event that took place 27 years ago. I mean, my eyes get big, et cetera. There's a lot of emotional impact.
Wow. All right, on the telephone, wanting to say hello and ask a question is Sky, calling from Santa Barbara, listening on the net. Hi, Sky. Welcome.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Ingo.
Hello.
How synchronous, Jeff, you brought up the issue of abductions, because that's what I was going to bring up. You know, on the back to the thing about telepathy with humans and or aliens, the thing I find interesting is that people who have alien contact or abduction experiences, and I've had that kind of experience, the telepathy with them is completely clear, completely effortless. I mean, that implies some kind of telepathic capacity in humans.
Oh, yes.
And yet, you know, we don't experience that in everyday life. And I mean, I don't know that any of us have the answer to this question, but why would it be so clear with them and then not normally?
This is the point that I've taken pains to try and draw out in my book, that if telepathy exists at all in a living form, in living forms, then it has to be universal, and it has to consist of something else besides language. It's like images do the trick there, and people are dealing with images, and they put words to the images after the event. There are 13,000 existing major languages on planet Earth, and it seems really quite odd that the ETs would have to learn 13,000 different languages in order to communicate with humans. And the fact is that the abductees say that the telepathy is involved, and it's only in a secondary way linguistic. So I got your point. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a very good question.
You know, are our telepathic abilities being blocked naturally or non-naturally by something going on here? And only when we enter the realm of the ETs is it, you know, liberated or something? I mean, you know, it's an interesting question.
Do they just know how to talk to us telepathically and other humans really don't have that knowledge and ability yet?
Oh, no. Developmental telepathy is being blocked on Earth by Earthside social forces, and probably by the other guys too.
Earthside social forces, that's not to say cultural, that's to say institutional.
Yes, absolutely.
And blocked electromagnetically?
Oh, just blocked. I mean, it's never permitted to develop. In fact, there's a wrong model for it right now, the radio model and things like that, and there's incontrovertible evidence that that psychic research, including telepathy, is not permitted to go very far by Earthside forces themselves.
Hmm. Scott?
I'm here.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I couldn't quite hear. That was really all I wanted to bring up.
Yeah, he made the point that telepathy on this planet is being blocked, not by a cultural bias, but by an institutional effort of some kind.
I see. Okay. Well, fortunately, that block doesn't always work.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't. That's the fun part of it.
Yeah. Where some of us slip through the cracks. He said the evidence was incontrovertible is an effort underway to do that and to keep the lid on it.
Oh, yes. If you want a conspiracy, there's one for you.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are a lot of people on this planet that wouldn't like the fact that we can go around and discover secrets.
Right.
No more secrets.
I have two essays on that in my website.
Oh, good. Good. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Elizabeth in Vancouver, listening on Hot Talk, KOTK. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Ingo.
Hello.
I wanted to say that I've actually seen one of those water fairies. I'm glad there's a name for it. I almost walked into one dark and windy night, and it was on the ground. Yeah, it was black. It was sucking up water out of a flooded field, and I had a couple of German shepherds. My friend was with me, and the dogs went crazy. They started jumping into the air and yodeling. It was really amazing.
Isn't this the strangest thing?
Yeah, I'm glad that someone else has actually named it for me now. It makes me feel better.
Water fairy. You don't get any better than that.
Really, water fairies.
F-E-R-R-Y.
Right. Yes, as in transport. Yeah.
Right.
Water transport.
I had a question. With all the people that are doing do-it-yourself remote viewing and other, trying to perfect their psychic skills, is there any consequence for this particular dimension of reality? I mean, are the walls moving, or do you feel that there's a thinning of the veil or whatever they want to?
No, I think that the remote viewing is going to be, unless it becomes more highly organized and more precise, it's going to be just a glitch of the 20th century.
Just a little anomaly.
Yep.
Well, I have one last question. This has to do with, I think Richard Hoagland has used the word quarantined, that we're quarantined here on Earth. And my thought is that this is the planet of bad religion. I mean, we are, after all, apocalyptics, and we do create apocalyptic weapons, and we have that vision. And I'm wondering if you think that this is the reason that we're being told to stay here.
Oh, well, it could be. I don't make those great jumps. Certainly if we're told to stay away from the moon, then we're told to stay where we belong, and that's on Earth, right? So, I mean, you can read that into it.
Well, the military is making all sorts of rather open statements about trying to militarize space to protect assets, the usual argument.
Well, they're not doing a very good job.
Not so as you'd notice.
Well, my imagination doesn't go in that direction, but anyway, it's a real honor to speak to you. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Don't put it that way. Thank
well, it is an honor. Thank you.
I'm glad to hear you saw one.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Bye.
Well, Ingo, that's great to hear. She just about made your day with that.
Well, I mean, water fairies.
Come on. I mean,
this really, if you ever saw the Australian footage of this show, you get a good idea.
Yeah, amazing. We got more callers holding. 1-888 on radio is our number. We're going to pause and come right back. Again, the phone number for Ingo's self-published book, 1-888-453-4046. 453-4046, operator standing by right now. $18.95 is the price. Penetration, the question of extraterrestrial and human telepathy by Mr. Ingo Swann. All right, Ingo, you've got some kind of a survey underway on your website. Talk about that?
Oh, when I got the idea of these unpublished manuscripts sitting around here that publishers wouldn't touch, I decided to float a survey describing them in my website and asking people if I footed the bill to publish them, would anybody buy them? So we got over 3,000 responses, which altogether were very good.
I should say.
For my little website, you know.
Which is www.biomindsuperpowers.com. It's all one string.
We were going to take the survey down, but it's been getting more responses lately.
We'll send a bunch of people over there tonight. So it's biomindsuperpowers.com. All one word, biomindsuperpowers.com. Bud is in Hot Springs, Arkansas, listening on the signal at Little Rock, 103.7 FM. Hi, Bud. Welcome.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Ingo, pleasure.
Yes, sir.
I'm a new listener and stumbled on this program purely by accident. And I must say it's a breath of fresh air to those who question authority sometimes.
Glad to have you. Thank you.
Yes. My question to Ingo is this. Ingo, do you have any idea who is really responsible for the construction of the pyramids?
I would have to make my opinion based upon a trip to the pyramids to psych them out in 1973, which is another strange tale, that they weren't made by Earthlings. These are extraterrestrial constructions.
And
I have no evidence to back it up. There's no evidence for that. But
speculation is good. As far as you know, would you have any idea as to the age of those?
Oh, at the time, I think they're pre-flood. That at least two chambers in the Great Pyramid were used as battery storage units of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, go to the Internet, listen to my program of January 1st with Christopher Dunn, 3 hours on that basic concept.
These were
high-tech machines built by people that weren't actually running around at the time we think they were.
Thank you both very much.
Thanks for calling, Jeff. Thank you. Thanks very much. That's interesting, Ingo. Thanks for sharing that. There's so many things I could ask. I just can't get to it all tonight. But in the remaining minutes, there are a number of email messages sitting here that we should try and touch upon. Mr. Swan was once involved with Scientology. His status during this interview was OT-7 and Class 6 auditor. I would like to know what influence Scientology has had on his abilities, if any. And mostly how he got away from this group.
Well, Mr. Hubbard's concepts had to do with various aspects of how to increase one's powers of perception.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very attractive to me. As to how I got out of it, I just sent in a letter of resignation and walked away.
End of story. Is the government's remote viewing program really dead?
Probably, yes.
So that's a true story, that they just didn't fund it anymore and it's not being carried on in any covert levels as far
well,
as
when, the, when the Cold War, you see, the, it only got funded anyway because of the Cold War threat from Russia.
Because of the side gap.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then when the Russian Empire went away, there was no threat involved with it, and people went back to business as normal. But there's a new one coming up from China, which is made clearly manifest in Paul Tong's book called Super Psychics of China. But, you know, authority doesn't do anything unless there's an absolute necessity for doing it, and since there isn't one now in this field, I don't think there's much going on.
Yeah, it's such a low cost, though, it would seem that it wouldn't be out of the question for some...
The cheapest project in the world. I mean, they didn't even have a system to process such low amounts of money.
Well, that's my point. I mean, they talk about funding as being an integral factor in making the decision, and it's really not, because the money's a joke.
Yes.
The Chinese are supposedly scouring their billion people for the best to collect and concentrate this psi ability in units, so to speak.
Yes.
It's an interesting
thing. They're developing
it
as a form of chi mm-hmm. energy, and it's very impressive, some of the stuff coming out of China. But, of course, it never gets in the American media, so nobody knows about it. And so one should get Paul Dong's book. I reviewed it in my website.
Okay, excellent. So another reason to drop by and say hello to Ingo on the net. The number again for the book is 888-453-4046. We have about 4 minutes left, that's all, and I'd kind of like to turn it over to you and see if you'd like to touch upon anything that I have not gotten to. Well, it's obviously a lot, but anything you want to leave us with tonight?
I think you're a wonderful interviewer.
Well, thanks.
And one thing I would like to say of my whole career in this field is that the best part of it is not the phenomena have been wonderful. I mean, it's wonderful to look into all this, but the best part is having had the opportunity to work with so many wonderful people.
Including Mr. Axelrod.
Well, he must be wonderful. I didn't get to know him too well, but there have been so many wonderful people involved in all of the work, and in fact, I owe everything to them, and I really want the world to know that.
Yeah, it's very gracious of you. Yeah. Well said, and honorably said, and we would expect that, I think, after listening to you for 3 hours tonight. What about this upcoming year, Ingo, it seems to be sliding past us at a very fast rate. A lot of people concerned about Y2K, and boy, the prophets are crawling out from under every imaginable object to stand up and say we only have 3 months left, 6 months left, 12 months left, and so on. Have you taken a peek down the road, and can you give us the world situation geopolitically is not looking real good. What do you see? And I hate to ask you to even venture a guess, but because, again, there's no validation, but do you have any sense about what times are ahead for us?
Well, I published a book in 1993, but it's one book that the publisher did publish called Your Nostradamus Factor, and the last half of it is involves certain of my predictions up through the year 2010.
Mm-hmm.
I did not foresee Y2K, and if it indeed comes about, then I really messed up on that one. I should have seen it. But I don't know. I mean, there's so many. The mixed messages about Y2K are really getting rough, so it's really hard to negotiate your way through them.
True, true. We've got people with their hand on chemical and biological weapons. We've got rogue states, North Korea and others, building intermediate-range ballistic missiles and threatening to do more.
I did refer to all that.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a real threat. If Y2K does take place in some form, it's a good time for land-grabbing and nationality scrunching and things like that to take place, because nobody will really be in a state of prepared readiness to do much about it.
So it is, as many have suggested, a perfect venue for solidifying of power and control over a ever wider breadth and depth of this planet.
Yep.
Could be used for all sorts of things. In fact, the issue could be, could it not, artificially induced to some degree to enhance that process?
Well, it's a very rough way to do it.
Better than dropping nuclear bombs, maybe.
Well, yes. I guess you're talking about depopulation, right?
That's been written about by some people allegedly on the inside, and they'd like to see this world population reduced considerably.
Yeah.
Smaller the herd, the easier the control.
Well, the smaller the herd, the longer the resources will last. For those that have a grasp on the resources, I guess.
Yeah, indeed.
That's outside of my venue. I'm always asking people I know about what they think. You know, people are supposed to know things, and actually they had better answers 18 months ago than they have today.
It's interesting. It's interesting you'd point out that none of the so-called prophets or remote viewers really did, to my recollection, pick out this Y2K issue, and yet it's been talked about in the computer industry for a couple of decades now that there was a problem coming.
Well, it's not unusual for the psychic realm. Somebody published a book in 1972 of 17 psychics in Canada and the United States who were going to predict up to the year 1990,
mm-hmm.
and none of them got the emergence of the Internet.
Wow. Well,
the most significant thing to occur. So, I mean, psychics are sometimes not so psychic, I guess.
Psychics are sometimes human.
Yes.
The old expression. Ingo Swann, thank you very much for spending 3 hours with all of us. It's been extraordinary, and I appreciate your time very much. And good luck with the book. And
thank you very much. You all were wonderful.
Thank you, Ingo. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, one more time. The book by Ingo Swann, Penetration, The Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy. The order number is 888-453-4046, or you can just go to Ingo's website, and lots to do there, as you've gathered, I hope, www.biomindsuperpowers, that's all one word, biomindsuperpowers.com, and do drop by and take a look. It's Friday night, and that means tomorrow is a day off for yours truly. David John Oates will be here on many of these stations tomorrow night with the backwards reverse speech program that so many of you are enjoying. David here each Saturday from 7 to 10 Pacific. And then Sunday night I'll be back with Glenn Kimball. We're going to talk about the reality in Mr. Kimball's research of a man named Jesus Christ. And then great programs all next week as we get into, believe it or not, the month of February 1999. So have a wonderful weekend. Take care. Thanks for choosing to spend your time here tonight with me and Ingo Swann. Hope you have a great weekend. See you next time.